ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Reading this morning from chapter 7 of Canto 2, text number 22, Lord Parashuram, and very wonderfully, there's three verses in a row about Lord Ramachandra. So, text 22 reads, when the ruling administrators, who are known as Kshatriyas, turned astray from the path of the absolute truth, being desirous to suffer in hell, the Lord in his incarnation as the sage Parashuram uprooted those unwanted kings who appeared as the thorns of the earth. He thrice seven times, that's 21 times, uprooted the Kshatriyas with his keenly sharpened chopper. The Prabhupada, in this whole chapter, very rarely does he discuss the Leela, he discusses prominent lessons from the Leela. And we'll go into the ninth canto and discuss the Leela part also. The emphasis in the purport is on the duties of kings, and the duty of kings, he says it four times so that we know that's important. The duty of kings is to lead subjects towards the path of God realization. They have the prime responsibility to lead the citizens toward God realization. They have the responsibility of leading citizens towards this end. And then kings that fail to do so are in the category of those that Parashuram chastised. Not only chastised, he annihilated. And those that survived scattered in different directions. So that the different directions, Prabhupada comments, just one of them, according to the authority of Mahabharata, the kings of Egypt originally migrated from India because of Parashuram's program of chastisement. There's so much in museums of today, King Tut and the crypts of Egypt, pyramids, according to Mahabharata, this civilization came from India. And of course, there's that famous verse in this canto, second canto, where from the kings of Greece and the Pulindas and Abhiras and Hunas, the Huns, so many different groups of persons. Civilizations, the idea is that civilizations that strayed from the Vedic path became decadent. Parashuram drove them out and they settled elsewhere. So some article in the past couple of months, can't remember when, some archaeological group found in Russia a murti of Lord Vishnu. And that's just an archaeological piece of evidence, but a temple of Vishnu. Deity of Vishnu or a temple of Vishnu? Which was it? deviation. But long standing, some kind of way, 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 way back in history relationship between Russia and India. And so here specific, Egypt, the worship of the gods of Greece connected to previously from India. So there are historical traces to these references being made in Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Puranas, this long ago event of Parashuram getting out his chopper and stopping the rampant spread of departure, just from here specifically, departure from the absolute truth. The Sanskrit is ujjita patam. Ujjita patam. Those who have given up the path of the absolute truth. So in the purport, brahmo ujjita patas. Persons who have gone against the path of the absolute truth. Brahmadruk ujita patam. Those are the persons. Depart kings, of all persons, kings who have departed. So, from the path of the absolute truth. And the duty of the kings is to take people, lead people, to the path of the absolute truth. When kings neglect to do that, all those who are dependent upon the kings neglect to do that. And the king suffers and all the citizens suffer, so the kings are the one to be chastised. And so Prabhupada, in his writings, chastised the kings. And Prabhupada is saying here, it doesn't matter whether the type of government is dictatorship, democracy, monarchy, oligarchy, autocracy, whatever it is, the duty doesn't change. The duty is to lead the citizens toward God realization. And then he describes, so that this is the purpose of creation, in fact, the whole of creation. When I was reading this, I was thinking of Ram's reply to Bali in the beginning of creation. Lord Brahma, creating this world, entrusted to Manu the responsibility of creating laws for mankind. Manu established these laws for mankind, and those who have the position of kings in this world must administer according to the laws of Manu. And according to the laws of Manu, what you have done is punishable by death. I have just administered according to the laws of Manu. So, kings are to bring persons to the path of God consciousness and according, not to man-made law, but to God-given law, to correct the situation when it becomes deviant. So, Parashuram, although the son of a brahmana, took up the spirit of a king and admonished those that had deviated. So that's the purpose of creation, Prabhupada writes. The whole creation of material existence is meant for this purpose. What's the purpose again? Leading people towards God realization and self-realization. Just to give a chance to the fallen souls who rebelled against the will of the Supreme Father and thus became conditioned by material nature. So there's the consequence of neglect of that purpose, and conditioned by the laws of material nature doesn't sound so bad. We're conditioned by the laws of material nature. That's life. The force of material nature gradually leads one to a hellish condition of perpetual pains and miseries. Oh, that's not so nice. And that's the nature of happiness in the mode of passion. Happiness in the mode of passion, according to Bhagavad Gita and real experience in life. In the beginning, it seems like nectar. And the end is like poison. Happiness in the mode of ignorance is poison in the beginning, poison in the middle, and poison in the end. And happiness in the mode of goodness appears in the beginning to be poison or difficult. Oh. So many restrictions. And so many don'ts. So many do-nots, Prabhupada would say. So the do-nots, that's to correct the mind from pondering material existence, trying to be the enjoyer of material existence. This chain, it follows while contemplating the objects of the senses, attachment. And then the next thing, after attachment, one's mind becomes bewildered. And when one's mind becomes bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls in the pool of material existence and suffers the perpetual pains and miseries of material existence. What happened? I was just pondering and enjoying. That's what's wrong with that. Everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to be happy. I was just innocently standing there pondering enjoyment. The next thing you know, miseries. That wasn't the plan. The plan was enjoyment. Some sparsha jabhoga. Dukkha. Jonaya devate. This some sparsha jab term comes in the first teaching that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita in another verse. The temporary appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in the course of time, like the winter and summer seasons, are to be tolerated, Arjuna. When the attraction of the senses for something comes, one should tolerate that attraction. Some sparsha is the senses in contact with the sense objects. That's life. So, impersonalism says, parch the senses. And devotional spirit says, engage the senses in a mood of service. And the in-between position is romper room. Try to enjoy. There go the senses, there's the objects, have a party. No rules. If it feels good, do it. Or just do it. And so that's the absence of the restriction that comes from the intelligence or the higher intelligence of the Supreme Lord. The purpose of creation is like this. So if one follows, there's this metaphor that's used repeatedly, like 6 or 7 times in the Bhagavatam, where those who are followers of the codes of the Vedas are compared to an animal that's controlled by a ring in his nose. So, very powerful. You've seen a big oxen. Look at those guys, man, they're big. Look out, here comes an oxen. And they put this little thing in his nose and he becomes as docile as that can be because that little tender part of the nose, you pull this way, oop, he goes this way. Pull that way, he goes that way. Slow down, go fast. And then sound messages when they pull. I learned this from Barsana Maharaj. Gi and ha. We could probably make other sounds, but gi and ha means left and right. So you don't even have to pull the rope, just gi and ha. He had learned the art of just standing by the fence in Vrindavan and having some animals in the field pulling a plow, and he would just say "Gi and Ha," and they would go plow the field. So the immediate situation is when the ring is in the nose and it's being pulled on. But those that are trained in spiritual life, it's just a sound vibration. The Gi and Ha. It's just from a spiritual master or spiritual authority or spiritual teacher, one just says, stop, go, turn left, turn right, watch out for the pothole in the road. And that's all it takes, just sound vibration. One becomes voluntarily controlled by sound vibration, but that voluntary control is life-saving or misery and painful existence-saving. Just sound vibration instead of the pull this way and pull that way. Now, at the beginning, it may feel like, oh, it's being pulled this way. Oh, I'm being pulled that way. Oh, I want to go. No, I got to go. Oh, I'm being controlled. It may seem like suffering in the beginning, but happiness in the mode of goodness seems like that, but it's not like that. It's leading one to a deeper and an inner happiness. And the purpose of creation, which is release or freedom from the pains and miseries of material existence, because the very nature of this material energy, the conditioning feature of material energy, it takes one down the path of uncontrolled passion. Hey, it looks good. What's the problem? Nobody's saying Gi and Ha, so I guess I can go. But that's, you know, we block out the sound vibration when we want to be in Maya and go down the path of, I don't hear any sound vibration, it just looks good. And then we're caught in the force of material energy, and material energy is not a kind master or mistress. She's very harsh, but it started out looking good, contemplating, enjoying. So when the kings do like that, hey, looks good out there, let me make it mine, without any regard for the codes of religion that are given to mankind, then when the kings do that, they're subject to severe punishment by the Supreme Lord. In this case, Lord Parashuram. Those going against the prescribed rules and regulations of conditional life are called brahmojita patas, or persons going against the path of the absolute truth. Now, going against it doesn't necessarily start like, no, it starts gray. It doesn't start stark black. I'm going to defy the absolute truth. I mean, that's extreme. That's Ravana. Good counsel? Don't give me good counsel. I'm going to defy. I want Sita. Marich, you help me get Sita, or I'll kill you. Okay. Either be killed by Ram or killed by you. Sita, submit to me or I'll eat you. Wow. What a choice. Love me or I'll eat you. Bring you into my kitchen and have you cut up in little pieces and have you for breakfast. Either that or love me. That doesn't sound like a love offer to me. So that's like really black. Generally doesn't start there. It starts in this like innocent territory of just contemplating, here I am, a nice devotee going along the path of practicing Krishna consciousness, and I'm looking over on the other side of the fence. It looks like it's green pasture over there. Hey, there's some, a little bit of, what's the harm, a little bit, after all, I'm a conditioned soul. And just contemplating like that, it's so clear in your mind from the time that I've spent absorbing your mind. It steals away the spirit of devotion and discretion and good character and good qualities and, you know, all the things that we all are at. Like Prabhupada said, in general, people are good. The leaders are bad. And because the leaders are negligent in their duties, people become bad. But, you know, just scratch the surface a little bit and they're good. So that's what preaching is. It's find the good and encourage the good by our ways of Krishna conscious life. But this, when submission to, like, using this metaphor again, placing voluntarily, the animal, you put the ring in his nose, and human civilization voluntarily submits. I put the ring in my nose. I submit to the codes given by the scriptures. Voluntarily. I take that as a happy position, to submit to the Supreme Lord and the scriptures and these codes of, in this case, religious life in the higher position, spiritual life. How can I dedicate some unofferable thing to Krishna? And my life is to offer everything to Krishna. So that's the higher check, is the principle of love. And the lesser check is the principle of, I don't want to have to suffer. I want to enjoy. But the message is, over on that side of the fence, that in the material energy side, in the neglect of the codes given by scripture, it's a path of, although it looks good, it's the path of suffering. So one who has that faith and submission is protected. Stray from that, and the protection is gone, and the understanding of right and wrong, the ability to take good counsel, good qualities, everything gets squished, crushed. In the course of time, the gray becomes dark and darker. Just the intervention of good associations, it changes that dark into light again. But it's hard sometimes when someone's heading in the path of darkness to take good association and come to the path of light. But that's the program of devotional service. Tamasi ma jyotir gama. Give up this position of darkness and come to the position of light. Back to Godhead. Message that Prabhupada is forever presenting in the Bhagavatam. Come to this position. Lord Parashuram, the incarnation of the Personality of Godhead, appeared in such a state of worldly affairs. That is, the kings had gone against the path of the Absolute Truth. And he killed all the miscreant kings. 21 times. Not like he killed each king 21 times, but he traveled throughout the land 21 times. Whoever's left, you're finished. And very, very intense. Just like in Ramayana, after Sita had been given to Ram, Ram broke and strung the bow and broke the bow. And so the daughter of King Janak was given in marriage to Ram. Dasarath came for the wedding. And on the way back, all of a sudden the sky became dark and fearful, and everyone was was trembling, what's happening? And Parashuram came on the scene. So battle, not battle, but contest between Parashuram and Ram. By Ram breaking the bow of Parashuram also, this rage that he had been in subsided. And he returned to his gentle brahminical state. But up until that time, killing the demoniac kings with his chakra. There's a natural question that arises. At least, when I remember hearing, what was it that set Parashuram off? And what terrible deed was done? It was so bad that he went traveling 21 times, destroying all the kings. Not just a particular king. He did a particular thing, but 21 times all the kings. One thought would be nice to read. I could narrate, but I thought I would read the ninth canto description of how this whole thing happened. And it involves a little bit Ravan also. So Janmadagni was the father of Parashuram. The mother, her name was Renuka, being the daughter of Renu. And they had many sons. The eldest of the son was Basuman, and the youngest was named Rama, or Parashurama. Learned scholars accept this Parashurama as the celebrated incarnation of Vasudeva, who annihilated the dynasty of Kartavirya. Parashurama killed the Kshatriyas on earth 21 times. So then, when the royal dynasty, being excessively proud because of the material modes of passion and ignorance, became irreligious and ceased to care for the laws enacted by the Brahmanas, Parashuram killed them. Although their offense was not very severe, he killed them to lessen the burden of the earth. So there's the indication. It's not commensurate with the particular offense, but he was an incarnation of the Lord for a specific purpose. So Prikshit wanted to know, what was the offense that the Kshatriyas, who could not control their senses, committed before Lord Parashuram, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for which the Lord annihilated the Kshatriya dynasty again and again? So then, here's the narration of what set him off. Shukadeva Goswami explained, the best of the Kshatriyas, Karta Viryarjuna, the king of the high highest, received 1,000 arms by worshipping Dattatreya, the plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality Godhead Narayana. He also became undefeatable by enemies and received unobstructed sensory power, beauty, influence, strength, fame, and the mystic power by which to achieve all the perfections of yoga, such as anima and laghima. So this is a formula for a problem. He's got great opulence. And so he became really proud. Thus, having become fully opulent, he roamed all over the universe without opposition, just like the wind. Once, while enjoying in the water of the river Narmada, he puffed up Kartavirya Arjuna, surrounded by beautiful women and garlanded with a garland of victory, stop the flow of the water with his 1,000 arms. Guess who was upstream? Ravana. Because Kartavirya Arjuna made the water flow in the opposite direction, the camp of Ravana, which was set up on the bank of the Narmada, near the city of Mahishmati, was flooded. This was unbearable to the ten-headed Ravana, who considered himself a great hero and could not tolerate Kartavirya Arjuna's power. When Ravana attempted to insult Kartavirya Arjuna in the presence of the women and thus offend him, Kartavirya Arjuna easily arrested Ravana and put him in custody in the city of Mahishmati, just as one captures a monkey. And then released him neglectfully. That's just to give an idea of the strength of Kartavirya Arjuna. Then one day, while Kartavirya Arjuna was wandering, unengaged in a solitary forest and hunting, he approached the residence of Jamadagni. The sage Jamadagni, who was engaged in great austerities in the forest, received the king very well, along with the king's soldiers, ministers, and carriers. He supplied all the necessities of worship to these guests, for he possessed a Kavadenu cow that was able to supply everything. Kartavirya Arjuna thought that Jamadagni was more powerful and wealthy than himself because of possessing a jewel in the form of the Kavadenu. So, I've got all this opulence, I've got to have that one too. Therefore, he and his own men, the high-highest, were not very much appreciative of Jamadagni's reception. On the contrary, they wanted to possess that Kamadenu, which was useful for the execution of the Agnihotra sacrifice. Being puffed up by material power, Kartavirya Arjuna encouraged his men to steal Jamadagni's Kamadenu. Thus, the men forcibly took away the crying Kamadenu along with her cap to Mahishmati, Kartavirya Arjuna's capital. Thereafter, Kartavirya Arjuna, having left with the Kamadenu, Parashuram returned to the ashram. When Parashuram, the youngest son of Jamadagni, heard about Kartavirya Arjuna's nefarious deed, he became as angry as a trampled snake. Taking up his fierce chopper, his shield, his bow, and quiver of arrows, Lord Parashuram, exceedingly angry, chased Kartavirya Arjuna, just as a lion chases an elephant. As Kartavirya Arjuna entered his capital, Mahishpati Puri, he saw Lord Parashuram, the best of the Bhrigu dynasty, coming after him, holding a chopper, shield, bow, and arrows. Lord Parashuram was covered with a black deerskin, and his matted locks appeared like the sunshine. Upon seeing Parashuram, Kartavirya Arjuna immediately feared him and sent many elephants, chariots, horses, and infantry soldiers equipped with clubs, swords, arrows, rittis, Shatagnis, Shaktis, and many similar weapons to fight with him. Kartavirya Arjuna sent 17 full Akshohinis of soldiers to check Parashuram, but Lord Parashuram killed all of them with his chopper. Lord Parashuram, being expert in killing the military strength of the enemy, worked with the speed of the mind and the wind, slicing his enemies with his chopper, which is called a Parashu, so he's Parashu Rama. Wherever he went, the enemies fell, their legs, arms, and shoulders being severed, their chariot drivers killed, and their carriers, the elephants and horses, all annihilated. By manipulating his axe and arrows, Parashuram cut to pieces the shields, flags, bows, and bodies of Kartavirya-arjuna's soldiers. Then comes Kartavirya-arjuna. Seeing these reverses, Kartavirya-arjuna, infuriated, rushed to the battlefield. Then Kartavirya-arjuna, with 1,000 arms, simultaneously fixed arrows on 500 bows to kill Lord Parashuram. But Lord Parashuram, the best of fighters, released enough arrows with only one bow to cut to pieces immediately all the arrows and bows in the hands of Kartavirya-arjuna. When his arrows were cut to pieces, Kartavirya-arjuna uprooted many trees and hills with his own hands, and again rushed strongly toward Lord Parashuram to kill him. But Parashuram then, using his axe, with great force cut off all Kartavirya-arjuna's arms, just as one might lop off the hood of a serpent. Thereafter, Kartavirya-arjuna cut off the mountain peak, like a mountain peak, the head of Kartavirya-arjuna, who had already lost his arms. When Kartavirya-arjuna's 10,000 sons saw their father killed, they all fled in fear. Then Parashuram, having killed the enemy, released the Kamadhenu, which had undergone great suffering, and brought it back with its calf to his residence, where he gave it to his father, Janmadagni. Parashuram described to his father and brothers his activities in killing Kartavirya-arjuna. Upon hearing of these deeds, Janmadagni spoke to his son as follows. What did he say? Well done, well done. No. He said, O great hero, my dear son Parashuram, you have unnecessarily killed the king who is supposed to be the embodiment of all the demigods. Thus you have committed a sin. My dear son, we are all brahmanas and become worshipable for the people in general because of our quality of forgiveness. It is because of this quality that Lord Brahma, the supreme spiritual master of this universe, has achieved his post. The duty of a brahmana is to culture the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is pleased by those who are forgiving. My dear son, killing a king who is an emperor is more severely sinful than killing a brahmana. But now, if you become Krishna conscious, Achyuta Chaitana, Krishna conscious, and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. And so, goes on. The sons of Kartavirya-arjuna, to get revenge for the death of their father, came in a secretive manner and cut off the head of Janmadagni. Parashuram put the head of Janmadagni back on his father's body and went to kill Kartavirya-arjuna's sons, and then kept going. Bad things can arise from contemplating, enjoying immaterial life. Although it may seem innocent in the moment, what's a little, what's the harm? So, we're in a situation where the heads of state are not leading the citizens in that direction towards God consciousness or the path of God realization. Pantam, Ujjata Pantam, the path of the Absolute Truth. So, absent that governmental leadership or heads of state leading citizens in that direction, it makes it difficult. The atmosphere is in opposition to go on a spiritual path. Everywhere you look left or you look right, you look straight ahead, you look behind you, it's material existence, sense gratification, abundant with very, very expert decoration and ornamentation and marketing. Please take me, please take me, please take me. And the varieties are unlimited, the bombardments never stop. Still the understanding, the determination of the devotee should be staying on the path of spiritual life. I've said this, I think I even said this last time I was here, but what comes to mind is a lecture that Prabhupada gave in New York, where he said, those that are in material life, they're running here and there, chasing after enjoyment. And when one becomes a devotee, the opportunities for enjoyment come and roll at one's feet. Please take me, please take me. And the devotee says, no, thank you. Prabhupada went like that. I only want Krishna. And it works like that. We try to become serious in the path of spiritual life, and it's almost like, hey, what's going on? There's this opportunity and that opportunity. It comes unsought. It comes chasing one. It's a phantom. Because the materialist is chasing after the phantom. And that's the way it works. It's not, it's illusion. And a devotee knows it's illusion and no thank you. But it has to be, to maintain that position, it has to be, I only want Krishna. I want to be in my relationship with Krishna. And this is outside of my relationship with Krishna. And so, thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to read very quickly the next three verses, because it following Lord Parashuram, there's three verses about Lord Ramachandra. He's the next incarnation, scheduled incarnation, was described here. But due to his causeless mercy upon all living entities within the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with his plenary expansions, appeared in the family of Maharaj Ikshvaku as the Lord of his internal potency, Sita. Under the orders of his father, Maharaj Dasharath, he entered the forest and lived there for considerable years with his wife and younger brother, Ravana, who was very materially powerful with 10 heads on his shoulders, committed a great offense against him, and thus was ultimately vanquished. The personality of Godhead, Ramachandra, being aggrieved for his distant, intimate friend Sita, glanced over the city of the enemy Ravana with red, hot eyes like those of Harak, who wanted to burn the kingdom of heaven. The great ocean, trembling in fear, gave him his way because Its family members, the aquatics, like the sharks, snakes, and crocodiles, were being burnt from the heat of the angry, red-hot eyes of the Lord. And while making the line, it says he fired arrows into the ocean, and then it became burned, burning hot, boiled. Bhagavatam says, in the anger of his eyes. So, different versions. Perhaps different incarnations of Ram when this happened. When Ravana was engaged in the battle, the trunk of the elephant which carried the king of heaven, Indra, broke in pieces, having collided with the chest of Ravana, and scattered the broken parts, illuminated in all directions. Ravana, therefore, felt proud of his prowess and began to loiter in the midst of the fighting soldiers, thinking himself the conqueror of all directions. But his laughter, overtaken by joy, along with his very air of life, suddenly ceased with the tingling sound of the bow of Lord Ramachandra, the personality of Godhead. And short purport here. However powerful a living being may be, when he is condemned by God, no one can save him. And similarly, however weak one may be, if he is protected by the Lord, no one can annihilate him. Hare Krishna. So any discussion? Members?
You were saying yesterday about Sugriva's behavior after getting the kingdom back from Gali by the arrangement of Lord Rama, and you said that there was good counsel available, and I think I'm misunderstood or confused, but there was good counsel available in the form of his wife Purati at that time, and but still he could not remember where he got his opulence from.
Well, the one that was advising him specifically was Tara.
Sorry.
Tara, the wife of Baha.
Yeah.
At the same time, being a wise person, she understood. You know, it's you would say it's human. You know, in this case, it's monkey-like. It's natural. Having been restricted for some time, one gets an opportunity for enjoyment and that restriction goes. So he lost it. But you know, the advice, Hanuman gave him the advice, Sugriva, when you make a promise, you fulfill the promise. And the rainy season is over. Don't, when you make a promise, don't make it for the other person to come and remind you of that promise. That's not good. Fulfill your promise now. It will make the strength of your relationship with the person who you made your promise to make the relationship so much stronger. Don't delay. So, Sugriva then sent the Devadas to come, unbeknownst to Lakshman, the Red King. But he was getting advice from also from Hanuman. Fulfill your promises.
The inspiration that I got was, as you said, like the devotees of the Lord, they are always reminding us.
Yes, that's it. That's it. That's it. And, no, the tendency is, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I've heard that. Yeah, yeah, okay. So not that it's familiarity that diminishes the effect of that good association. protect ourselves from familiarity by respect. Then we can, with respect, that good counsel can enter. So it's a trade-off. I mean, we want association and we want close association. We want friends in Krishna consciousness. And when there's you have friends in Krishna consciousness, you have a lot of association with them, and then the tendency can be familiarity. Respect goes down and familiarity comes up. So close association while still remaining respectful. Therefore, by protocol, we address one another as Puru, is how Prabhupada taught us. And, you know, that also can become familiarized. Look at Prabhu. So the spirit of respect is what's essential. And appreciating with genuine feeling, what is this valuable association, valuable commodity that's being given to me, this gift that's being given to me, this good association, good counsel, you know, good qualities. So my qualities, by being in association with these good quality people, I can have good qualities. So all of this comes back to there's the religious side, and then ultimately it's the side of shelter in Krishna. That's the one thing from which everything else suspends. So therefore, sarvadharmam pratyaja mamekam sharanam bhaja. Well, it's not like abandon all other kinds of, you know, don't consider at all what is proper and improper conduct. Just abandon all, just be improper as much as you like, just surrender into Krishna. That's not the message. It's those proper conduct items, they're subordinate to and suspended by this higher item, the ultimate, what's at the top of the pyramid, that from which the whole chandelier is hanging, and all the ornamentation of the chandelier is from this one thing. Keep our attention on surrendering to Krishna, and surrendering to Krishna means through the representatives of Krishna. We can approach Krishna, receive Krishna's mercy in that way. That foremost. And then the other is decoration. You know, an important decoration.
Okay. You were mentioning yesterday that for the devotees, the devotional service becomes like a second nature. There was actually a person who had come just once for our Purusha. Mataji was asking that for you it's a second nature, but for us, how do we take it? Or in other ways, how do we convince them to take
practice.
It?
Practice. That's, you know, how something becomes second nature. I practice. And by association. I practice in association. How do, you know, children learn how to sit down and eat their meal? Through association and practice. You know, don't throw it on the floor, it goes in your mouth. Practice.
I think she was not ready to, you know, get there, I mean.
Okay, that's another thing, but that's how you get there. Rebellious spirit is part of the material energy. Th- therefore, one of the preliminary steps in helping persons to come to that stage is just friendship. And in friendship where it's not, you know, just accepting the person for who they are. Of course, one needs to be circumspect to a certain degree about who I want to make friendships with in that way. Persons that are not inimical, you know, inimical people generally select themselves out before we get started, but... One of the rules of thumb, I learned this from Bhakta program training. One of the rules of thumb in deciding who is a good candidate or suitable candidate for making such friendship with, or, you know, extending in a very focused way the message of Krishna consciousness, or we say, to whom should we preach? So it's not persons, what's critical is not to find somebody that agrees with everything that you say. That's not critical. What's critical is someone that when they, whatever idea people have some ideas of things. When they present them, and they're straightforward and honest, and they present questions and their doubts and so forth, but when they hear a plausible explanation, they accept it. Without mentioning names, I remember very clearly one of the programs that, one of the visits to University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. One of the students that came to one of the programs was really argumentative. And he came, it was 3 days in a row, and he came to every program, and it was arguing, arrogant, arguing, and different ideas, and that was okay. Because when he heard the counter-argument, he said, this makes sense. It was, and it's a very, very wonderful devotee. He definitely had different ideas. I may be making the extreme. It wasn't argue. He had different ideas. I think that's more accurate representation. He had different ideas. And they were not submissive. A little, you know, college edge to him, argumentative. But he had never heard the message of devotional service presented as we had presented it. So it was like, hey, what's this? Wait a minute. What about this? What about that? Very, very nice devotee. Transformed. So this particular individual you're speaking about, we try to encourage them. And, you know, for some people, it's just not the right time. It's not necessarily, they're not a candidate for devotional service. They're passing through something, and they need to continue for some time passing through that something, and something changes in them. They have all this kindness that you've extended to them, and basics. That's another thing I've seen over time is, although we don't know what's penetrating what's not, so many things that people hear, they hear it. They just like don't like it because of some attitude of rebelliousness. But it, you know, they remember it. And they mull it over, and somehow that wears down the rebelliousness. Then still lives there.
Talking about happiness and the world, goodness and practice. that in our conditioned state, we can think that our current conditions, when we sense the reason and sense the reason, I find myself almost of my temple in that state. And, sometimes it becomes a hard struggle to control the senses. And so, how can I not go too deep into that struggle phase?
One of those things that I sent a copy of a class, or yeah, it's a transcription of a class that I gave in Mayapur. This point was there. It's failing to take responsibility for one's actions. What can I do? This is my nature. My nature is, this is, you know, I'm in this space a lot. What can I do? So that abdication of responsibility is irresponsible. We are responsible. So just take, you know, what is just take, I take responsibility for being in that space. I don't have to be in that space. Not like, you know, it's not coming from the spiritual platform. So it's, I'm conditioned in that way. I'll take responsibility for whatever past has made me like, you know, conditioned in that way. I take that responsibility. But I also take responsibility for choosing my course of action. So it's that simple. It's making a choice and staying committed to that choice. That's on a personal effort platform. And then there's the transcendental position, which I briefly touched on, which is I have a relationship with Krishna. I'm attached to that relationship with Krishna. I want it to be a nice relationship, and so I'm going to invest in that relationship with Krishna. Or you can add Guru and Krishna. I value that more than anything. Like this, I invest in that relationship. And that automatically takes care of what my senses won't do and will do. So it's taken care of. It's already done. The power of a loving relationship with Guru and Krishna. It's settled. You know, there may be, due to past stuff, attraction, repulsion, supposing a man is not committed to his wife, or the wife is not committed to her husband, what happens? The mind entertains, you know, my brother-in-law, who's no longer my brother-in-law, speaking like that to my sister. You know, I think a man is not running up. You know, if there's something wrong, if a man doesn't look around. You know, and so he did. And so the relationship is no longer. And you're committed to the relationship, that it takes care of so many things. So many things. Whatever it is, I'm committed to this relationship. And it excludes so many other things. It just isn't something I have to manage anymore. It's just not there. Yeah, relationship with Krishna. It's all inclusive. So then why should I have a relationship with Krishna? It's going to deprive me of things I like to do. Well, those things I like to do, that's not what, it's not what it appears to be. It's passion and ignorance that leads to suffering. And then there's the abbots. Yeah, but my nature is... So then the commitment hasn't been made yet. Yeah, but... So then you go, at least take responsibility. Higher is the commitment to the relationship.
Yeah.